Welcome to Segue to Success, an internet-based radio program dedicated to helping privately owned businesses survive and thrive in today's business climate.
I'm Brent Hamacek.
And I'm Tom Kuchin.
Back for another week. Another grand week of internet radio excellence, I guess, right?
Exactly.
We've been doing this long enough that we've gone from good weather to bad weather to good weather.
Well,
spring is here.
As good as it gets anyway in February Chicago.
That's right. You walk outside and you smell the mud and, you know, it's got that...
the melting snow.
The smell of spring in the air. So we have a good show today, I think, because we've been talking for the last few weeks with all sorts of support people around the business industry. And I think we've got more of those kinds of people coming up over the next few weeks.
Right.
But today we've got an actual real business person.
They do exist.
They really do exist. And, you know, and we'll keep in tune with our theme of what it's like to operate a business today. But our blog this week, which is, how do people find our blog, by the way? We write this blog. How do they find it?
They can find it on Link Local Network or through our own website, which is www.segwaysolutions.com.
Spell Segue the wrong way for people.
I will spell it the wrong way, which is the right way for us. SegueWay.
Right. Yeah. If there's any children out there listening, if you get Segue in the spelling bee, forget about this radio show because you will get kicked off. So we wrote a blog this week about a topic that I think is really pretty interesting and pretty important. And we run into this all the time. The difference between being an entrepreneur, being a business person, being a business manager, and the fact that these things aren't synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the business person and entrepreneur, if you watch any business program on television, whether it's on, you know, CNBC or Fox Business or whatever it might be, they use the terms quite interchangeably, but they're not.
And, you know, I think even when I was working in a large corporate, we tried to institute in a culture of entrepreneurship. And it was very interesting because everybody had a slightly different view and understanding of what that meant. What is entrepreneurial? How can you be entrepreneurial in an organization that has 300 to 500,000 employees?
Right. Well, and the truth is, many of the people that go to work in a large corporation, not all, but many who go there, go because they're not entrepreneurial in the first place. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
I mean, it's a whole different sense of being. It is an animal spirit almost. It's a behavioral thing to be an entrepreneur. I don't know if anybody's ever done a study, but I've got to guess that the profile between an entrepreneur and a bungee jumper isn't radically different.
I see a grant request coming for that study. I was going to say when you started talking about that, you said I bet there's been a study on entrepreneurs. Absolutely. In my head, I was thinking they've studied everything there possibly is on entrepreneurship, but not that.
I like the idea of a grant request. If there's anybody listening to our show whose name is Grant, we'd like you to do some research to find out about that. But it's the risk taking element. It is the fact that the entrepreneur has an idea, they look for and find some green space somewhere in the marketplace. You know, if you want to open a hamburger joint, you don't open a hamburger joint that's like all the others. Even in that case, you're looking for something that's different. And so you commit that energy, you have the vision and the desire, but then the day you open the door, a funny thing happens. It turns into a business, and now you have to run it. And now it's not about the ideas and the creativity per se. Now it's about being a manager and being an operator and dealing with employee issues and all the other things that go with it.
And a business person.
Yeah, exactly. So the notion that risk-taking entrepreneur is also automatically assumed to be the business person or the business manager is folly.
Right.
And I think that's why so many businesses fail. You know, within the first 5 years, over 50% of all startups fail.
Right.
Startups are started by entrepreneurs.
Right.
And so it doesn't mean that they were great operators.
Right. Well, there's a fundamental difference, I think. When you look at the growth cycle, and this was something, I mean, we touched on it when we were back in college, back in the ancient days, on the growth cycle of an organization, you know, from concept implementation and maturity is at the end of the cycle. What I thought was, now maybe I wasn't paying enough attention, but I thought what was given short shrift in those classes, I think it was management probably, where we talked about this, was the entirely different skill sets that are required in those different phases of a business.
Right.
Where it's a unique person who can go from one to the next phase and stay on top of everything and be able to do it themselves. Normally it takes different skill sets. Rarely do you find that in the same person. Usually you need a group of people to build a team that can handle everything.
Well, that's what makes this a great way to bring in our guest, because that's what makes our guest and her partner such unique people, because not only were the entrepreneurs to start it, but then they have remained as the overseeing managers of it through the differing life stages of the company they have,
right.
from startup to growth to maturity, you know, and then facing the challenges of the recession. And now they're a mature, you know, stable, growing company again.
Right.
And so let's bring in Jill Gordon, the co-founder of the retail chain Kid Snips, located in the metropolitan Chicago area. Jill, are you there with us?
I am. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for
thanks for joining us.
We appreciate it. So,
oh, my pleasure.
Do everybody a favor and tell them what Kid Snips is, besides just a word that sounds really fun. I mean, I imagine our audience right now, they're out there listening to this saying, wow, this is just fun, and they don't even know why yet. So.
Okay, well, my midlife crisis was to start Kid Snips, which is a group of kids' hair salons where we also sell toys and novelties. So I was lucky enough to have a partner from day one in this venture. She was a classmate of mine at Northwestern's MBA school. We became friends over the years, and then we both sort of reached an interesting crossroads in our lives where starting a business made the most sense, and this was the idea that stuck.
Well, let's spend a little time on the idea that stuck and how you got there, because, you know, entrepreneurship can go a couple of different ways. Tom and I have experience with people who suddenly have a passion or a vision for one thing that they just came up with that they want to do. And on the other hand, there can be the type of entrepreneur that says, look, I want to do something. I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do. And they might vet a host of concepts.
Right. Their passion is being the entrepreneur.
Right, exactly. So how did you and your partner, Kim, hatch this idea and select this idea? I think there's a story there.
We call ourselves the reluctant entrepreneurs. Really, in my daydreams of what I wanted to do when I grew up, the idea of having my own business wasn't there. However, at age 40, I had been home, you know, I'd been raising kids for a decade and wanted to return to the workplace and didn't want to go back into advertising to be the world's oldest, grumpiest account executive. So really, the appeal of having our own business, having control over what we were doing, having control over our hours, you know, so it was the appealing factor. We bounced a couple of different kid business concepts around, and Kid Snips was the one that stuck. We got the idea because I went home to my parents in New York City and happened to walk by a kid's hair salon that just, I'd never seen anything like it, and loved the concept. Pretty much at the same time, my partner Kim Stoles, her family was in Washington, D.C., and so when I said, oh, my God, I just saw this amazing thing, when she went home to Washington, D.C., it turns out there was a different company that had several kids' hair salons operating in the D.C. area. And so then we thought, wow, there are these places out there. We went hunting and looking at various different concepts of kids' hair salon and threw together the best of several different concepts, and that's the idea that stuck.
So as you built what you have today, as you began to conceptualize it, you saw others that were doing it. And
right.
So you
our feeling was you don't have to invent the wheel entirely from scratch. You know, you can pick up chunks of it from other places that are doing it well.
What part did you invent? As you put this together, what did you do that became your own sort of secret sauce?
I think our secret sauce is not being as highbrow as some of the kids' hair salons and still bringing in the toys. It's a whole different skill set being a buyer of toys and handling the requirements of selling toys. And so fortunately, my partner's background is retail buying for large chains. So she brought that skill set with her. I am the CFO, and we both share management responsibilities on a day-to-day basis.
I have a question for you, Joe. In a lot of the entrepreneurs that, or business people, we use the term, for this discussion, we'll use the term interchangeably because not all of them were successful. You know, we find one of the challenges they have as they're putting together their concept and beginning their startup is they get an awful lot of advice. And some of that advice is they feel is people telling them what they think the entrepreneur or business person wants to hear. It's all positive. It's great. I love it. But they feel as though there's really not a lot of thought put behind those comments. The other bit of advice I get, it seems to be all negative. It'll never work. Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? It's just that type of feedback almost seems to overwhelm them. Did you face these? And if so, how did you get through, say, the advice that you like to hear, that you didn't like to hear? How did you get through that? Because that seems to cripple a lot of startups.
Good question. We spent a long time in the concepting stage, and our goal was to talk to anybody who knew anything about running hair salons, cutting hair, you know, anything with the word hair in it, because we were coming in without experience in this field. And so we heard both. It's so wonderful, you're terrific, aren't you geniuses? Which, you know, take that with a giant grain of salt.
Right.
And the one of, oh, it'll never work, you'll never find stylists who will want to work for a kid's salon. It turns out that was closer to the truth. That was and is our largest problem, finding great stylists who really love working with kids. When we'd hear negative, that was a good thing because that made us stop and think and work out a plan of how are we going to go hire, you know, who's going to work for us, how are we going to appeal to them. And frankly, my partner Kim went to beauty school for just 1 month of auditing haircutting to sort of get to know who are hairstylists in beauty school? What are they looking for? What, you know, haven't they liked? And we came out of it with some great insights. We also did a focus group with hairstylists. And we came out with insights of kindness and fairness and making them feel included, that they're part of the family of Kid Snips, was as important as the prestige of the place. And that was an incredibly valuable insights for us.
Interesting. You said that your partner Kim went to cosmetology school as an auditor. Does that mean that they put like rubber covers on the scissors so that you can't actually hurt anybody?
she wasn't allowed to cut real people, just mannequins.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Real people who weren't
good.
Family members, I should say.
Even in Kid Snips, it's safety first.
Exactly.
So as you take it from that concept stage and you do the research, then there comes a day when you open the door for the first time. By the way, when was that? How long ago did you open the first door?
It was a little over 15 years ago.
Wow. Okay. And so tell us about from, you know, that day you opened the door and the days that followed, once you now officially, it's no longer an entrepreneurial idea, it's no longer research, it's no longer what you want to do, now you're doing it. What changes almost instantly?
Well, I have to believe
for me,
everything works
having
perfectly
come
according
from, to plan. You know, for me, the biggest shock was, you know, having come from well-heeled advertising agencies, you know, suddenly as we're setting up the store before we opened, and it's, okay, who's taking, you know, out the garbage? And you realize there's nobody but you guys to clean the toilets, to take out the garbage. You know, there's no task that you can say to someone else, oh, do this. You know, you're the it, for better or for worse. So that realization sort of was, I don't know, just something I hadn't really thought through and was a little surprising. And then when we opened the door, sort of the responsibility of this is now a real entity, and anything that happens is on your shoulders, you know, was again sort of a, it felt a heavy weight at first. Over the years, it's become lighter and lighter and lighter as, you know, as we've gained more confidence and sort of been there, done that to so many things. You know, we've seen a lot of the mistakes that happen already. Not all, God knows, but, you know, a good, it takes a lot more to raise my blood pressure than it did week one or month one.
There's, I remember when I was in the banking industry, Tom and I were both in banking, and I had entrepreneurial clients who own their own business or work for themselves. And, you know, I would always say to them, wow, I really envy you. You know, you work for yourself. You're your own boss. You're in charge. You can do whatever you want to do. What a great life. And, you know, and they would always say the same thing. They would say it's not so glamorous. You eat what you kill. You don't ever really get any time off. If you don't do it, nobody else does it. You're always worried about the next deal as opposed to the one you're on now. And then when we got out and started to work for ourselves, we realized it's not so glamorous. You eat what you kill and all these different things. So there's you found a lot of responsibility as the owner-operator right away.
You know, day two we had a stylist who we realized couldn't cut hair.
May I help you?
Oops, wrong line. I'm so sorry. I'm actually calling in from one of our hair salons. So
it's not a problem. You're an owner operator and an entrepreneur
exactly.
Manager.
The glamour goes with me wherever I go.
The timing couldn't have been more perfect.
That was So you were saying you had a stylist who couldn't cut hair. That sounds problematic.
Exactly. When you've got two stylists and one of them is just catastrophically awful, and so you know we had to fire someone on our second day. You know, and when you don't know where the next stylist is coming from, that's a scary place to be. You know, desperation somehow makes things work out. You just scramble harder and hunt deeper to find, you know, where you're going to find the next stylist. And there were nights that we would just be cold calling from lists of licensed cosmetologists, you know, and having 99 people sort of say, oh, I'm not working there, and finding one who stopped and thought about it for a minute.
Did you ever regret firing that person?
Not for one second.
I love it. Brent and I did a show earlier in the year, right around January, actually, we did two shows on our do's and don'ts. And this was one of our top 12 do's and don'ts in business. When you have an employee who's not working out, fire if I can't remember exactly
if you're going to fire them eventually,
really
fire them now.
Right.
I really endorse that, and we try to be humane business owners and treat our staff decently. But really, when you get that it's not working out feeling, you are so right about deal. It doesn't get better with time,
and it doesn't get better for them either. It's not doing them any favors by putting
off
the inevitable.
And for your clients,
You're
entirely right.
Right.
So you started with the one store. How many do you have today?
We have 9.
So from 1 to 9 over, and the most recent store that you opened was in what year? I want to give the audience just a perspective here. So first one was 15 years ago.
Our most recent store we opened as the economy was falling down the toilet. We opened in the spring of 2009.
Signed
a lease 8 months beforehand, right before Lehman Brothers tanked and the economy started going downhill. So, you know, everything was rosy when we signed that lease, and the sky was falling by the time we opened.
Mm-hmm. What were the challenges you found as you built it from 1 store to 9? And I'm also curious, I'll ask as sort of my own follow-up question, you know, for a concept like yours that's the retail location with a real identity, it lends itself so naturally to a franchising concept, and yet you've never done that, which I'm sure a lot of people find interesting. Some people probably find frustrating with you because they're probably urging you to do that. But what was it like to grow it as a manager, and what were the decisions you made that for you and Kim that caused you to hold on to this and keep it as yours?
I think one thing, going back to the reluctant entrepreneur theme,
yep.
Kim and I, which frustrates a lot of people, but it really makes sense to us. We wanted to grow slow enough that we could feel that we were never overwhelmed with growth and never got ahead of ourselves financially or in terms of not being able to be on top of what was happening at the newest salon and the existing salons. So we've grown intentionally slow, self-financed, and are very prudent. So part of that comes back to your question of being franchised. Mm-hmm. When I was in advertising, one of the accounts I had, and this is back 25 years ago, was Pearle Vision Centers, right at the time that half their stores were company-owned and half were franchised. Right. And I was sort of low enough in the totem pole that I was the it person for both the managers and the owners to call and complain about the advertising and request more advertising, promotional material, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I would hear panicked calls from the franchisees saying, you've got to do something better with promotion. Another chain just opened up across the street from me. I'm going under and my mortgage is on the line. And, you know, as low a little nobody as I was in the pecking order, you know, I would be up at night feeling terrible about that company, that franchisee. Even though, you know, really it wasn't my problem, so to speak, but it was. And so I thought, oh, my gosh, I could never be the franchisor who would be getting these calls from people who were losing their home because of, you know, luck, bad management, new competition, whatever. And so really, I'm okay gambling my own money. Kim's okay gambling her money. But we don't want anybody else's livelihood or lifestyle resting on our shoulders. You know, and well, we probably walked away from a lot of money that we could have made, you know, had we gone out and franchised aggressively. Because, you know, ours is a pretty good concept.
Well, that's pretty noble. For the record, Tom and I would be happy to gamble your money also. So if you and Kim get tired of gambling your own money, we would be happy to gamble it. So
okay, thanks. I'll keep that in mind.
Right.
So tell us about the recession. You know, you opened up your last store just as it began. What was it like being a manager of your empire as we went through the worst recession since the 1930s?
You know what's happened? First of all, we sell a lot of inexpensive little last-minute pickup toys that, you know, the bouncy balls, the little Beanie Baby equivalents, now called their Beanie Boos, little things that are $4, $5, $6, $7. And that's the first thing, if you're looking after your pocketbook for your family, that's the first thing you're cutting out. So our toy sales were devastated. And still have not come back. It's been really changed that part of the business. Fortunately, that's a smaller percent of what KidSnip sales are than the haircuts. The haircuts we also saw, if you used to get a haircut every 5 or 6 weeks, you're now stretching it out to 7 or 8. You know, and so mm-hmm. that will, even though we're not losing that many clients, mm-hmm. we're doing fewer haircuts. So we felt that. But fortunately, that started to come back. That's pretty much come back, I would say.
If you were a restaurant, we'd say you were having fewer turns. But you're,
right.
So you keep the clients. What about from a pricing perspective, did you have to make any kinds of adjustments or enticements for clients, or were you able to hold to your pricing standards and stick it out and maintain the perception of value for the dollar? How did you handle that element?
We did more couponing than we've ever done before. So a lot of people come in with a coupon. Fortunately, our most favorite type of coupon is, you know, get free toys with a haircut, or you know, and so the toys, if you walk out with $3 worth of toys, it only costs us $1.50. You know, we've been more promotionally aggressive that way. We really don't like lowering our haircut prices. However, you know, this January and February, we've been running a toddler special on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, again, to build traffic during our slowest days where, ages 3 and under, haircuts are $5 less than they normally are. So that for us, that's a hugely aggressive haircut promotion. Again, in our worst months of the year, on the slowest days, to just build some traffic.
You know, we've only got a couple minutes left, and before we ask you maybe a final question or two, I want to make sure you've got all the time you want to have to tell people about finding KidSnips. All the things you want to say about your operations, so people can find you. And come see
you.
So go do that, please.
The easiest way to find us is kidsnips.com, KIDSNIPS.com. That lists our locations and the phone number for each place to book an appointment directly. However, the other way to reach us is through our company phone number, 773-529-3900, which, again, will put you in contact with the phone number for the store nearest you. And our stores are located. We have one in Chicago in Lincoln Park on Clybourne Avenue. We have one in Wilmette at Eden's Plaza, Deerfield at Deerfield Village Plaza, at Vernon Hills in the Westfield Horathon Center, one in Arlington Heights, and one in South Barrington at the Arboretum of South Barrington, Naperville at Route 59 and 95th Street, Wheaton at Town Center Wheaton, and Oakbrook at Oakbrook Center Mall. So I think that's 9. And
I think
thank
that
you
is
for
9.
That plug. Okay.
I think you bet. So we've only got about a minute we have left. Briefly tell us, how has the challenging economic climate that we've just come through, what would you say that it has fundamentally done to make how you manage your business different today?
We're more price sensitive than we were before. The only upside is we've lost some competition. So, you know, in the shakeout of the economic tough times, you know, the winners get a little stronger and some of the weaker ones shake out. So, you know, there is a little bit of upside. But, boy, we're looking forward to our profitability returning to the pre-2009 time.
So there is some creative destruction.
Right.
Exactly.
Or we could call it hair salon Darwinism. Well, Jill, thank you very, very much for being a guest on the show today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure entirely.
And hopefully as people, especially in and around Chicago area, listen to this, with kids or without, because they also will cut an adult's hair. You can sit in a Jeep or a rocket ship or something, have your hair cut, feel young again. I think that's cool. So thanks for joining us. I'm Brent Hamacek.
I'm Tom Kuchin.
We'll talk to you next week with another great guest. Take care.
Bye-bye.